Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 20th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we share with you the sound of 10,000 people standing in silence at the vigil for Eurydice Dixon. We look at LGBTQ issues abroad as we look past our borders, because it isn't just the headline. Just because there isn't a headline doesn't mean we shouldn't be reminded of injustices for our communities. Plus, we speak to Brisbane Triton's Jeremy Archer, winner of the Out Role Model Award at the Australian Pride in Sports Awards.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Silence can speak volumes. And on Monday night in Melbourne, at a vigil for Eurydice Dixon, it did just that. 1 week on, here on The Informer, we recount how communities on and offline have been managing to change the narrative and what that tone means for where we go to next as we try to create a safer and more equal society for all. Please note, the subject matter of this piece may be distressing to some and listener discretion is advised.
Last week, 22-year-old Eurydice Dixon was raped and murdered in Princes Park in Melbourne. She was walking home through the park after a gig in the city. She was only a few hundred metres from home and she'd just texted her partner to say she was safe. Eurydice's body was found on the soccer pitch in the early hours of the morning. By the time the news broke on Wednesday morning, police had issued a statement cautioning people walking through the area to remain aware and to keep their mobile phones on them at all times. By Wednesday night, 19-year-old James Todd had turned himself in to police. He will face court on one count of rape and one count of murder. It is believed that the two were strangers. He has not applied for bail. By Friday, the conversation was shifting. Police comments urging women to take responsibility for their safety had sparked a backlash on social media. The comments were criticised as victim-blaming. Many women said that they were sick of living in fear and demanded that the conversation change to one that focused on telling men not to rape women rather than telling women how they could better hide from the threat of violence. Victoria's Premier Daniel Andrews took to social media to support this new conversation. His powerful closing statement, "Go about your day exactly as you intend, on your terms, because women don't need to change their behaviour. Men do," echoed the popular sentiment. On Monday morning, Victoria's Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton announced publicly that police should have used better language in the wake of Eurydice's rape and murder, and Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said that more needed to be done to change the behaviour of men. It is possible that this is the first time women have spoken out against victim blaming and been heard on a national level. It's certainly the first time the conversation has changed so completely to one that looks at the behaviour of men, who are almost exclusively the perpetrators of gender-based violence. It can't undo what happened to Eurydice Dixon, but perhaps it provides some hope for the future of our national consciousness. On Monday night, the nation left politics behind for a moment. 10,000 people made their way to Princes Park to hold a silent vigil for Eurydice on the soccer pitch where she died. Thousands more held similar vigils in parks across the nation. At the request of her friends and family, it was not a politicised event. Instead, attendees stood in silence for half an hour in the icy wind, remembering Eurydice and all the other victims of gendered violence. This is the sound of 10,000 people standing in silence. Vale Eurydice Dixon.
Thank you for joining us in that minute of silence. That was Rachel Taylor-Jones. And if you feel distressed by any part of this story or have any personal concerns on LGBTIQA plus issues, please contact the team at QLife on 1800 184 527 or for web counselling at qlife.org.au. Or you can contact Beyond Blue on 1300 224636 and at beyondblue.org.au. And in an emergency, always dial 000.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Sporting identities, clubs and codes across the country gathered in Melbourne last night for the inaugural Australian Pride in Sports Award, celebrating outstanding achievements in LGBTI inclusion in Australian sports, both on and off the field. The Australian Pride in Sports Awards was the first celebration of its kind, dedicated solely to recognising exceptional efforts in making sport more inclusive for LGBTI people. Produced by Pride in Sport, the national non-for-profit sporting inclusion program spearheaded by Australia's largest LGBTI health organisation, ACON. Water polo was heavily featured in the nominations, and winners last night, and now on The Informer, Dina Curie speaks to the winners of Out Role Model Award for Brisbane, Jeremy Archer, who is also a member of the Brisbane Tritons, Queensland LGBTI and inclusive water polo team.
What an amazing award to win, let alone be nominated for, but to actually win the award of Out Role Model of the Year. What was it like when...
To be honest, I didn't recognise my own name on the screen. I had literally just sat down about 3 minutes earlier from picking up the other award for the inclusive event, and I bumbled my notes. So I was just kind of sitting there and listening to Andrew announce, I guess, some of the things that I had done. And nothing registered. I was like, okay. And then it wasn't until my partner, who was sitting beside me, Clint, was like, "It's you." And I was like, "What?" And there was music and lights all flashing, and it was extremely overwhelming. When I got to the stage and started my speech, I was literally shaking because I couldn't comprehend it. It was that kind of special for me that it was just totally unexpected and overwhelming. I would like to thank the Pride in Sport program for the amazing work that they do to promote and assist sporting levels at both state, I guess, and club level. What they do is amazing. So certainly if you're a team member of a club that's not involved in Pride and Sport, definitely reach out to them. And also water polo itself in Australia for me has been really, really amazing. So I really probably need to take a moment to thank the presidents of the LGBTI clubs and also the Barracudas and Water Polo Queensland for their assistance and help and support.
Now, that was the personal award that you received, but what were the other ones?
We had nominated for 4 awards in total, and we walked away with Inclusive Initiative, which was the National Water Polo League's Pride Cup and Water Polo Queensland's Pride Shield match. The cool thing about it is that that event is won last year's as well with Melbourne Surgeon Victoria Seals. So to win it 2 years in a row is really, really special for the water polo community, especially the LGBTI community, both in Victoria and Queensland.
What is it like, do you think, seeing this kind of representation for LGBTIQ inclusivity in the sport of water polo?
I think it's pretty huge. The fact that 3 years ago there were two clubs, there were Sydney Stingers and Melbourne Surge, who were, you know, the founding members of water polo, especially for inclusivity. So to have them come up to Brisbane and actively support us and grow and turn and create the Tridents, and then we passed that back to Perth with the Perth White Pointers last year. So we've literally doubled membership across Australia in 3 years in inclusive water polo. So I think it's now one of the biggest inclusive sports in Australia, represented in 4 states. Each club has at least 100 members, and when we do our rookie programs or our boot camp programs, we get 30 to 40 new people through the door. And we get all people from all different walks of life as well, members of the LGBT community as well as allies who just want to get in the water and play water polo in an inclusive, fun, safe environment. And I think that's the key message, is that the inclusivity is encompassing of all. And I know I can speak on behalf of the other presidents and Sean, who's now the Tridents president, and that's the key message, is that they want it to be accessible for everyone, regardless of who you are.
So why did you start playing with the Tritons?
Great question. When the Tritons kind of were first coming around or were kind of starting to grow, and it was just an idea at that stage, my partner said to me, "Look, I used to play water polo at high school. It's Brisbane. We don't really do anything in the water. Do you want to try it and see it if you like, and then we'll see how far we can ride it. So we went to the very first boot camp, and I soon found that my skill level was really bad in the water, but I kind of am a little bit bossy, or known to be bossy, so I kind of jumped into an admin kind of role to help the Stingers and the Brisbane Barracudas steer it on its little journey, because at that stage there was only 12 members, and by the end of the 6 weeks, we'd grown to 40. And then we're like, okay, this thing is going to grow and become big, so we formalised a committee and I became the founding president. So for me, it was about spending time with my partner and making some friends, and then it just kind of grew into this massive thing, which then led me to my current role with Water Polo Queensland. So really, it was just spending time in the sun and hanging out with my partner.
What was it like being at the awards and seeing all these amazing representations? Because this is the first time these awards have happened to really recognise this inclusivity in sport. What was it like?
To see the amount of high-level sports people that were in the room, right down to the grassroots with the Perth team, the hockey team that were there, had just picked up two awards for inclusive coach and community club, was huge. Just seeing that, you know, having David Kowalski there, having the Australian Sports Commission, Andrew Purchase, it was just great. Like, it was really amazing to see and feel the love and level of support. Having AFL, Swimming Australia in the room, Cricket Australia, Cricket Victoria, Water Polo Australia, Water Polo Victoria, Water Polo Queensland. It was really nice to see the level of support and the change that has happened in the past 3 to 5 years, where there was information that was out there that clubs and state levels weren't interested in having LGBTI inclusivity in the sports. Now they're promoting and championing it. Seeing the back end of the marriage equality campaign with AFL and cricket and Union League and water polo, and how we all stood behind it at state and national level, is, you know, it's just huge. So it was really nice to have that mentioned too last night as well, where everyone kind of came together, and regardless of how small your sport is or how small a part you played or how big a part you played, everyone was equal. And it was really lovely to take a moment to celebrate those achievements with everyone.
Do you think having these kind of conversations about equality on a sporting level is helping to change the narrative of it that we see?
I really think it is. Having been at a Catholic school and played rugby as a kid, and very badly, I did it because I felt like I had to, and I never really felt like I was part of the team, and I was always kind of would come to training, play the games, and leave. I didn't get socially involved. Hearing Alex's story and David's story and some of the others that spoke about how they just wanted to feel included, they just wanted to be part of a team and do well for their country or their sport or whatever level, having that level of conversation and to be able to stand up brave and have them in front in the public, you know, opens so many doors. And if we can have one kid or one adult return back to the sport because they feel it's safe for them, then those difficult conversations or going through those difficult memories again is totally worth it.
For someone who doesn't feel like they're much of a role model or that they'd won the award, you certainly do know how to speak as one.
Thank you. It's crazy because I really don't see myself as a role model. It was when I accepted the award last night, it was when I had to say those words, I really stumbled. I just want to be included. And like everyone else, I found a little pathway where my little voice could make change. And if it can make change for someone else to have a pathway, then I'll happily wear it. I will. I'm proud of what we've all achieved, and I don't think I can really call myself a role model. I think everyone involved in inclusive sports at any level can call themselves role models, because it's a community. It's not really one person, and I truly believe that.
Well, that's the good thing about sport as well, that it really does take a team. And within sport, we are seeing a growth in pride and inclusivity, as we were talking about, in sport compared to other community activities. What do you think it is about sport that creates this space?
I think it creates a place where people can come together. You know, in a nightclub or in a bar, people are relaxing, but that common goal is fitness or getting to know someone or just enjoyment, being out in the park or in the water. It's that common goal of coming together, and I think that's what, if you're in the water, if you're playing, or even if you're, you know, in the stands, that common goal is just being in part of community, and I think that's the drive. And having so many different outlets now, be it swimming, tennis, hockey, water polo, rugby union, the AFL teams, the Pride Cups to support. Being there, I think, is that sense of community. And I don't think there is any other way or anywhere else in the world where you can do that apart from in sports. Sports, it's that common goal that unites people. And I really love that as we move forward with these Pride movements and then these inclusive movements, it doesn't matter. You could be sitting next to anyone of any religion, race, gender, identity, but the common goal is either A, supporting your team that's playing, or B, being in that team. And I think that's something special.
What would you say to people who are unsure how to get engaged with sport or to feel included and how to reach out in that way?
Find a sport that you're interested in or that you might be interested in. So for me, it was water polo because my partner played and he loved being in the water. So for us, that was the natural way. You know, if it's rugby you really enjoy watching, then maybe try rugby. But the reach out through social media, like all of the clubs, all the LGBTI inclusive clubs have rookie programs or boot camps. Come along to their trainings, check them out, meet the guys and girls that are playing, and then dip your toes in. The best way to get involved is literally to jump in the deep end. And there's always opportunities for beginners. No sports team is going to send anyone away. They're going to want the membership. They're going to want to include you and welcome you into that community. So my advice is just do it. Jump in and get involved, because I tell you, the journey that water polo has given me in the past 3 years, both with the opportunities with being on the board for Queensland now, but also my own personal development, my own confidence, my skill level, my fitness, it's second to none. And the amount of friendships that I've now made around Australia, and then those that travel to the gay games and the Purchase Cup and the other events, you know, you make lifelong friends all around the world. It's worth that moment of going, am I going to be good enough? Can I do it? It's 2 seconds, because once you're there, it's a different world.
That was Dean Arcuri with Jeremy Archer, recipient of the Out Role Model Award at the Australian Pride in Sports Awards last night.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We welcome the report of the independent expert on protection against violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Every single one of us should be free to walk down the street or live our lives without fear of violence and discrimination. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and gender non-conforming people across the globe endure hostility, intimidation and exclusion based on who we are or who we love on a daily basis. The report highlights the need to remove laws that entrench discrimination and stigma based on sexual orientation and gender identity. As the report positively notes, Australia now has marriage equality and has led the way in repairing the harm caused by the criminalisation of same-sex activity, delivering formal state apologies and introducing schemes to erase unjust historic criminal convictions. However, putting the issue of marriage equality to an unnecessary and harmful public vote in 2017 fueled hate speech and violence and caused deep and lasting harm to LGBT people and their families. Like many countries around the world, more work is needed in Australia to protect LGBTI people from harm, from public harassment and hate crime, so-called conversion therapy, and forced or coerced surgery. States can and must play a critical role in addressing the root causes of bias and prejudice which underpin this violence and discrimination LGBT people face. We call on all UN member states to engage with the independent expert in his vital and life-saving work. This is about fairness and equality, dignity and respect, love and happiness. Thank you.
Yesterday, human rights lawyer Lee Carney had the honour and privilege of delivering a statement to the UN Human Rights Council on the importance of protecting LGBTI rights globally. Lee is in Geneva for the next 3 weeks, advocating for stronger human rights protections in relation to LGBTI rights and women's rights back home. And we look forward to touching base with her next week to see how these conversations are going.
I'm standing here in Geneva, outside the UN, where I've just delivered a statement to the UN Human Rights Council. Today, the independent expert on sexual orientation and gender identity tabled his first and major report calling to end the scourge of discrimination and violence that LGBT people face worldwide. Right now, more than 3 billion people, that's almost half the world's population, live in 72 countries that still criminalize same-sex activity. It's unsurprising that there are some countries that don't want the UN to be doing this kind of work, that don't believe that LGBTI people deserve the same fundamental human rights as everyone else. But some countries stood up and supported the UN's work in this area, and that included Australia. It's great to see Australia take a stand in support of the UN's work. But we delivered a statement that called on Australia to do more. We want the Australian government to put an end once and for all to public harassment, to hate speech, to hate crime, to forced and coerced surgery. It's not over now that we've got marriage equality. There's still so much more work to be done, and we can't get complacent with our human rights. Because fundamentally, this is about fairness and equality and dignity and respect.
Here on The Informer, we bring you Australia's LGBTI news and current affairs, and we love doing it. We have other shows on Joy, such as Worldwide Waves, that look at what is happening globally. But sometimes it's important for all of us to take the time to focus past our own backyard. During Ida Hobbit last month, we at The Informer started talking about finding ways on the show to highlight what's going on in our LGBTIQA+ global community, while still bringing you the news and current affairs for Australia. We started to remember that 12 months ago, we couldn't stop talking about what was happening in Russia, with vigils of solidarity all around the country. And here we are, 12 months later, and circumstances for our LGBTIQ communities in Russia continue to get worse, and we hear about it less and less. Now on The Informer, Darcy Meehan reminds us of the past year in Russia, because just because there isn't a headline doesn't mean we shouldn't be reminded of injustices around the world.
Last year, The Informer reported on the gay purge in Chechnya, which made international headlines when Russian pop singer Zemlin Bekaev went missing. Bekaev was last seen on August 8, 2017, when he travelled to Chechnya's capital, Grozny, to attend his sister's wedding. During this time, many gay men had reported incidents of being abducted and tortured by Chechen authorities in what was being called a gay purge. It's widely believed Bekaev's disappearance was a result of this anti-gay purge, as the singer was believed to have recently come out. The leader of Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, was questioned about the abuse of gay men and stated that gay people do not exist in Chechnya, claiming you can't persecute people who don't exist. Although almost a year has passed since Bekaev's disappearance, he's still missing, and there's been no answers given as to what happened to him. This has led to many pressuring Russian authorities to further investigate his disappearance. The Chechen leader Kadyrov has since made further statements, suggesting that Bekaev's family are likely the ones responsible for his disappearance, going on to say he believes that the family would likely have committed an honor killing. Quote, "If there were such people in Chechnya, the law enforcement organs wouldn't need to have anything to do with them, because their relatives would send them somewhere from which there is no returning." Many have taken Kadyrov's suggestion that Bekaev was killed by his family as confirmation that Bekaev is in fact dead, and as an excuse from Kadyrov, who seems to be preparing a narrative to justify Bekaev's death by shifting responsibility away from Chechen authorities. Kadyrov has been deflecting heavily during these most recent allegations, stating that foreign agents were responsible for sensationalizing the news about Bekaev's disappearance. Kadyrov went on to explain that so-called human rights activists make up all sorts of nonsense for money. The Chechen leader has repeatedly denied reports of anti-LGBT abuse, with his spokesperson calling them absolute lies and disinformation, despite his blatantly homophobic remarks and apparent desire for Chechnya to be a country without gays. If there are any gays, take them away from us. To purify our blood. If there are any, take them. Still, the Chechen leader has suffered few ramifications for his government's gay purge, which remains ongoing in Chechnya. Russian leader Vladimir Putin has largely shrugged off accusations of the state-sanctioned abuse, unconcerned with any potential political backlash. Despite the initial news coverage, little has been done to solve the disappearance of Zemlin Bekaev, or to address the wider issue of the persecution of gay men in Chechnya. Kadyrov has not been held accountable, and there hasn't been sufficient pressure on the Russian government by the international community to get Kadyrov to properly address these accusations. However, the Russian LGBT network is determined to do something about it. Not only are they leading efforts to evacuate those in risk out of Chechnya, they're also teaming up with the website All Out to launch a global campaign demanding that Russian authorities investigate this case. If you or someone you know would like to help the Russian LGBT network get answers and help the victims of the Chechen gay purge, you can sign the petition at go.allout.org or by searching justice for Zelim. That's Z-E-L-I-M.
It is important to look past our own borders. Today the news announced that the United States is leaving the United Nations Human Rights Council, with US Envoy to the UN Nikki Haley calling it an organisation that is not worthy of its name, marking the latest withdrawal by the Trump administration from an international institution. What's that mean for LGBTIQ communities in the US and around the world?
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Join generous Joy patrons Gary Singer and Jeffrey Smith for this Radiothon's Hour of Power on Monday, June 25th, live with Anna and Dean on Murphy's Law. Gary and Jeffrey will be matching every dollar you donate between 5:30pm and 6:30pm. Put it in the diary, that's Monday, June 25th, for 1 hour only, 5:30pm to 6:30pm. And don't forget, donations of $2 or more are tax deductible. Support Joy this year and keep us out loud and proud.